I'm Adam.
And I'm Matt.
Welcome to The Dad Experience, a podcast where dads can connect and openly share stories. Welcome back, Matt. It's been a while since we've gotten together. It's been a few weeks. A little hiatus, a little bit busy lately, huh?
Yeah, it's been super busy. It's nice to be back in the basement studio.
Basement studio recording. You know, it's been a crazy busy couple of weeks, and I know it's been busy for you, and it's my busy time of year. The end of the year is always very busy with concerts and events, and hey, that's parenting too, though, right? You're busy with that stuff.
Yes, so it is all sure busy.
Similar for you, you got all those kinds of concerts and year-end things at school and events. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's been going on lately? Like anything of note that we should all know about that you can share that might help some of us out, of us new folks especially?
The thing that's been occupying my time and mind lately is at the school, I volunteered to work on the school garden. We're a green school, and part of it is they have a garden. And they had one. It was just a surface garden.
Cool.
But it's been kind of overgrown, and people are reluctant to take it.
Uh-huh.
So I decided, well, I'll do it, but I kind of tend to overdo things. So I want to do raised beds. I want to build
There's
a fence around
wrong with
it.
Overdoing.
So, you know, I did this little sketch, and, you know, I haven't presented anything to anybody in a work related for like 7 years. So and nobody's asked me to do this. And
you
so
just take this upon yourself.
Yeah,
you
I take this upon myself.
Say, I'm going to do this for you, and that's it.
Yeah, so I meet with the principal, and I'm nervous about this.
You're in the principal's office. Everybody gets nervous,
yeah,
right?
I'm like, why am I nervous talking to the principal about something I'm volunteering for that she didn't even ask me to do?
You were never in trouble as a kid, though, were you?
No.
Yeah, that's why.
No. So I show it to her, and she gives me the green light, and now I have to go shop around to places to see if I could get some materials donated.
That's awesome.
And the next week I got to get it built and ready to go for planting kind of for Memorial weekend.
You know who you need to talk to?
Who's that?
It's my wife. She did that at her school. She is in charge of the whole community garden at her school.
Okay.
And she runs it all and has parent involvement, and she has raised beds. Last year they did a bunch of stuff with, I think Home Depot helped them out.
Okay, because
they did a bunch
of
raised beds, mm-hmm. and then I don't know how they did it through Home Depot, and it was locally done through somebody, or if it was, you know, through corporate a lot of times, but mm-hmm. They did that, and then this year they got a huge greenhouse.
We might get a greenhouse from another city that I guess was shutting one down. They might send it over.
I bought
school.
A little one for us. I mean, it's tiny, but this I think is a pretty big one, and mm-hmm. you know, you can make them too.
Cool.
I know a lot of people and a lot of schools have done it as like a project-based learning type thing.
Right, yeah.
Where the kids collect a bunch of like 2-liter bottles and they make them out of those.
Oh, okay.
Which is cool. It might be a cool project for kids. But anyways, yeah. That's pretty neat. That's really cool. Teach them how to sustain, you know.
Yeah.
I bet they'll get excited about it too. You guys can do maybe like a dinner someday that's all from their garden.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited because I still feel like I'm the new guy in the school. Like there's this big established group of volunteers. They all seem to know each other, and I'm the quiet new guy that shows up.
So let me ask you this, mm-hmm. then. I guess this kind of maybe leads into some of the stuff we're doing, but is this core group of people, is it mostly female, or is it mostly male, or is it dads, is it moms? What is it?
It's all female.
There you go.
And mostly Japanese, so there's a language barrier.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of them speak English. Sometimes it's broken English.
Okay.
You know, and they've been welcoming.
Okay.
But I mean, it's very clear I'm an outsider,
right.
Or I feel very much like an outsider.
But. So I guess my next question on top of that is it the language that maybe makes you feel like an outsider, or is it because you're a male?
I think it's both.
Both?
Yeah.
Okay. I could see that. It's just interesting to me that's, mm-hmm. you know, and I could see though where you're trying to, you know, to get in and fit in, and
yeah.
that would be tough too. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how
you
I would handle it.
Yeah, you see like the groups and they're laughing and hot, and I'm like, hey,
yeah.
It's hard to be comfortable and be myself and all.
But
that
you know,
stuff.
I'm sure those barriers will break, and you're pretty good about breaking those type of barriers. So that's pretty neat. That's really cool. That's
right.
Going on.
So this is kind of my project. I'm ready to
awesome.
Dive in. I'm nervous, but I'm very excited.
Cool.
How about you? What's been up with you?
Well, this week was a real stressful week, kind of like I was saying at the beginning. It's been, you know, being a band teacher, it's, this is concert season. So,
yeah.
You know, my school did a concert, and then the high school had a concert the day before, and it's just, it's been an emotional weekend or week for me. Mm-hmm. My really good friend is retiring at the end of this year. I've known him for a long time. He actually taught me. He was young and he taught me when I was in marching band in my school. And then he took a chance.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then he took a chance on me right when I got into college.
Oh, wow.
I was only 19. He took a chance on me being his like drumline guy.
Okay.
So I've been with him for now 20 some years. I've known him.
That's a long time.
So you go to work and we're really close. And it was tough. And I was asked to be a part of his last concert and kind of help give him a huge send off, which was really cool. But it was very emotional. And mm-hmm. I had to give a speech about it, about him. And it was really cool. And you want to do somebody justice. That's such a loved teacher in the school as well as in the community and mm-hmm. has done great things. So it was very emotional. And I dreaded doing the speech all of, you know, for the last couple of weeks, not because I didn't want to do it, but because I knew that I would get on stage and just be a mess. And I gave it a couple of times before.
You tend to do that?
I have a tendency to. I'm an emotional person. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I've been known to cry. I can remember ever since I was a kid. I've been like that. We would go on trips. Like mm-hmm. my family is from Europe. My dad is from Malta, and my whole family lives there. And I remember when I was five specifically, we were there for 5 or 6 weeks. And we're leaving, and I just, for that whole day, I was in tears. I just couldn't face yeah. anybody. I couldn't say bye. And still to this day, when I travel or go see family like that, like, I don't like people coming to the airport and stuff. And it's not because, I guess it's because I just don't want to be that way, because I don't want to be in public that way.
You don't want to be emotional yeah. in front of you. It's very vulnerable.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and it's so it's been going for a while for me. But anyways, this week it happened, and I guess, you know, it wasn't as, you know, thinking back at right afterwards, like, oh, man, it just was a mess. But I was able to see a recording of it, and I was like, wow, it wasn't as bad as I thought. But it was tough, and it still was emotionally draining, and I've been exhausted, so I'm ready for the weekend. But it was a good event, and everything kind of yeah. went smoothly, and then my stuff went well. So it was a good week, but an emotional / kind of stressful week.
Yeah, it's tough to be vulnerable publicly, especially yeah. when you're a male.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
I'm assuming you were in front of your students as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the mm-hmm. thing, too. You know, I'm the guy that's like intense and like wants kids to do well. And I think it's partly from what I've done and been gone through as far as what my upbringing through the music and marching band and things mm-hmm. like that was. But yeah, it was for them to see that side of me, which was actually kind of good.
It was probably good.
It was good, too.
I mean, it shows that you're passionate.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's actually a good tie-in to some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about, we watched a documentary recently called The Mask You Live In. It's directed by Jennifer Newsom. And The Mask You Live In is about, it takes a look at how our culture's definition of masculinity is harmful to boys, men, and ultimately our society in general. And just to give an idea of some of the stuff they talk about, I want to share a few quotes from it. This first one is from Dr. Caroline Heldman. It says, "Masculinity is not organic. It's reactive. It's not something that just happens. It's a rejection of everything that's feminine." We can talk about that later, but that spoke to me. And this other quote is by Dr. William Pollack. It says, "The way boys are brought up makes them hide all their natural, vulnerable, empathic feelings behind a mask of masculinity. When they're most in pain, they can't reach out and ask for help because they're not allowed to." So there's some kind of heavy stuff.
Yeah, oh, very heavy. Yeah, very heavy. That makes you think, yeah.
Yeah, so with that, we'd like to talk about some of these topics covered in this film. Huh. And how they've affected us and our experiences, and how ultimately masculinity has influenced how we are as fathers.
Yeah.
No, so let's start topic. At the very broad sense is like, let's define masculinity. Like, how do you, I'll ask two questions. One is, what do you perceive masculinity is in society, and then you personally, what do you want masculinity to be?
Yeah, well, in perceiving, you know, I've always, it's very much I guess manly things come to mind first. What I see as manly things. It's like
what you
society
see
as
manly,
things, or what you see on TV as manly things. And I guess I go back to some things like, I think what masculine, I see football, or I see hockey, or, you know.
So sports.
Sports I see with masculinity, you know. And then I, other thing that really sticks out in my mind, and it really was sticking out in my mind when they talked a lot in the movie was, and came to my mind, was I remember hearing a lot, and not necessarily from my family, but just in general in growing up, was, are you a man or a mouse?
Okay.
I heard that saying a lot, you know, and whenever anything got timid or you got reserved or you got emotional, it's like, come on, buck up. Are you a man or a mouse? So, I mean,
right.
that's like kind of how I see it. Like, society is, are you a man or are you a mouse? Are you going to be meek? Are you going to be weak? Or are you going to be this tough guy, you know?
Like
I think He-Man, and I look back to a lot of the things that, you know, you may have seen on TV as a child or whatever. It's, you know, and also as masculinity, I see tools. Like, I see, like, people working tough outside, you know,
yeah.
or, you know, fixing things. And, you know, those are the things that I see as masculinity, you know,
for
you
me,
know, tough guys.
For me, I remember, you know, thumbing through, you know, parents' magazines and seeing the ad for Marlboro cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the Marlboro man was just, like, the ultimate, like, manly man.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I mean, and as surprisingly, it didn't make me want to smoke, but I was just like, whoa, that's a real man.
Right.
You know?
No, I totally. I remember seeing that ad. There was a huge one always on the way back from the airport. I remember when I was a kid, mm-hmm. there was one. I was like, saw this huge, larger than life
yeah.
ad of this Marlboro cowboy guy that's just like larger yeah. than life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this huge thing.
Do you have any personal experiences where you were made fun of for not fitting a stereotype? Or, you know, you had mentioned earlier that you were emotional ever since you were little. Did
yeah.
either your parents or other parents say anything? I remember I had to do pull-ups in gym class,
uh-huh.
and I did one. And the
yeah.
the neighbor guy came over, and he saw that I had an award for doing one pull-up, and he made fun of me.
<I'm> like, that's harsh.
I'm 9 years old. Like,
right.
how many pull-ups am I supposed to do?
I don't know. You know, as a kid, I just try and think back, and, you know, I was always in music, and I was always in, ever since I was little, like when I was four, I've been a musician or whatever involved in music, and, you know, a lot of times I sang a lot in elementary school, did a lot of, was chosen for a lot of different musical singing things in front of the school. And, you know, although I think it was respected as that, I was never chosen. I remember specifically never being chosen almost till the end for every single thing I did that was athletic.
Gym class. I was second to last
whatever,
picked every time.
You know, and there were things that I was good at and I could do, but never was
yeah.
able to pick. You know, I remember specifically going out on the playground and trying to play football, and I was just that guy that kind of stood at the end that kind of played and never got the ball or whatever. And it's just, you know, I guess my interests were a little different, even though I wanted to fit in, because that's what I think, like we said, society wanted you to do. But necessarily, I probably wasn't very good at that stuff.
Did you
want to
be in that football group or that soccer group?
I think I did. Yeah, I did. I mean, until maybe I mean, I guess I'm trying to think back. Did I or not, or did I want to fit in? I don't know. Maybe it was more of a fit in because, you know, I probably would have been happier doing something musical or whatever, but that
right.
just wasn't an option, you know? It wasn't a place where you could go
yeah, cause
and
I,
do that on recess or
yeah,
whatever it was.
It was all like the boys were playing soccer at recess, and I think I just didn't think I belonged there.
Right.
So I didn't even try to get in that group. So I'm like, wow, this isn't me anyway.
Right.
Like, they're not going to accept me because I'm not like this tough sports guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I did. I tried to fit in. I did have friends on all sides of the coin, but I do remember being a lot of times bullied. I remember getting made fun of, you know, whatever. I remember specifically in elementary school, and I don't know if this kind of aligns up with our topic or not, and it does because it's man up, but it was like just taking getting made fun of or whatever, and it was like, I remember I was never too keen on, like, I didn't care about hair, my hair, what it looked like in sixth grade or fifth grade or whatever. I just go to school and do it. And I got made fun. I had thicker hair and whatever. I remember specifically getting made fun of, like, you know, dog hair, matted hair, whatever. And I wasn't dirty. It wasn't anything like that. It was always, I was just made fun of and bullied for that, whatever it may be. And you know, so I just, maybe I wanted to try and fit in or be a part of those groups. I can say that none of those people that I went to school with, I can pretty much say, I'm pretty sure in elementary school, I don't have any of those people as friends anymore. So I guess it didn't matter, but maybe I did want to fit in. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, that's what I kind of remember. You know, those are the things for me that I feel society. And I guess even as a young age, being imprinted as you go play football.
Right. You know, it's all, you know, I felt like for boys, it's just sports,
mm-hmm.
and rough right. stuff. Violence, video, you know, it wasn't so much video games then when we were young.
No, I didn't have very many chances for that.
But
like, you know, the things that my outlets that I think I would have fit in with in elementary school weren't really given as options for me until
later.
And I mean, they had them in elementary, but it wasn't like this. It was a group that you could be involved in, but it wasn't a group that you were with every day. Whereas when you get in middle school for band or whatever, it starts to become every day, or in junior high it comes every day. Then in high school there's many more groups you can be involved in, so you see much more, and you see them on weekends. So, you know, I got a chance to fit in, so there wasn't a place for me
mm-hmm.
to do what I wanted to do and create those friendships that were maybe necessarily what I was interested in and into
mm-hmm.
that weren't considered maybe, you know,
right.
masculine. I don't know. I wonder what, I try and think back right now, and I wonder what did the girls do when we were on recess? What did they do? Do you remember?
I remember, like, hopscotch.
Mm-hmm.
Then, like...
the only thing I can think of is tag, but I mean, I'm just trying to remember.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I wasn't paying attention.
I didn't either.
I was off by myself. There was one other person watching.
I wonder what it is. And I wonder, because mm-hmm. I just remember specifically sports at recess or swinging on swings.
I watch the kids after school. We always go to the school playground and... there's a group of boys that always goes play soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems the majority of girls or maybe little boys stay on the playground stuff. And now my daughter, they do a lot of like nurturing play where some little sister's the baby and they play that. Or they found a dead bunny once and they were playing detective on what killed it. And, you know, it seems like very different where the boys are always playing ball or, you know, running around, chasing different. And I know boys and girls are different.
I guess girls, I'm trying to think now that I just said playing, you know, kids or whatever and, you know, maybe house, things like that. But I don't remember that at recess in elementary school. Maybe I just don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Maybe I was scarred from all that. I don't know. I was different.
But what I find interesting is, you know, the arts aren't looked at as very masculine, you know, music, you know, the more traditional art of drawing and painting. But when you're a rock star, when it gets to be like rock and roll or something, or to be artistic that way, it's like, then you're super cool, you know?
Right.
And the masculine rock stars of, you know, our childhood, the 80s are all definitely sexist.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, treat women terribly.
Or we're forced to be pushed into the background and forced to take a persona on that maybe wasn't their own persona, too, from when we grew up.
Right, yeah. So it's just interesting that, you know, I don't know if you felt this, too, but I felt like being in music and being a drummer mm-hmm. kind of put you at a different level.
It did. With it the always boys. Did. It was really the masculine instrument.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you play trumpet. Oh, Dudzinski plays drums. Right. Yeah. Dudzinski rules.
Well, still to this day, we both were in drumline in college, right? Yeah. When people ask you what you play, if you said you played trumpet,
mm-hmm.
what do you think the answer would be?
Well, that's
pretty cool. That was probably a cool experience. But mm-hmm. when people ask you and you say I was in the drumline, what
like,
do they say?
Oh, really?
That's my favorite part. That's so cool. I love the thing you do at X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z or wherever. And it's like, yeah, no, it is cool. And it's fun. And I enjoyed doing it. Not why I chose it. You know, a lot of guys will say, I chose it so I could get girls. That's not why I chose it.
Yeah, I got to get the chicks.
I was always interested in that instrument. I actually didn't start there. But it's funny how that works. And I feel like that's like one of the only things... when you look at the traditional instrumental setting, that's mm-hmm. what's driven as, you know, the masculine instrument.
Now, being a musician and then being an educator,
yeah,
you know, that's also not looked as very tough. You know, mm-hmm. you're not a dominating, you're not in the office, you know, making deals and smashing stuff. Being a teacher is a very nurturing role.
Right.
In college, telling people you're an education major or music major, did you feel uncomfortable or did you get any feedback to, you know, why are you doing that or anything like that?
I don't think I did specifically per se because, or I don't think many people did in general. I think being a music major is a totally different beast in its own. It's like you're with those people and that's who mm-hmm. you're with all the
time.
And then when they lumped us, you mean the general education classes?
I mean, just, I'm sorry, people. Like you're at a family party and they're, oh, Adam, what are you majoring in? Oh, I'm education. Or just people you'd met, like, oh, you're an education major. Did you? And the reason I asked it, I was an interior design.
Well, I was going to ask you.
I was an interior design major. When I chose it, I had no idea that it was female dominated.
Right.
And go to college my first year, and, you know, I was like one of two guys. And I was uncomfortable, especially I'm 18. I'm all of a sudden at a big university, so I'm mm-hmm. a small guy. I'm insecure. I'm not confident, and I'm the only dude. And then my friends would tease me. I felt uncomfortable even after. I'll get back to that, but it bothered me so much that I switched majors.
Really?
Because I felt like, man, maybe this isn't for me. You know, I just maybe design isn't it. Maybe, you know, I want to do something else. So I switched to business. I did that for a full year, and I got into the business school, but I just hated it. Like, I didn't like it. Yeah. So I switched back. And after, even after I graduated, I would tell people, people ask what I do, I'd say I work at an architecture firm. I wouldn't say I'm an interior designer.
Yeah.
So I work at an architecture firm because that sounded a little bit more butch in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to the point where I would say I'm an interior designer, but we do a lot of projects in Vegas because it has like, Vegas. Yeah, I get to go to Vegas, you know. And was it cool to go to Vegas? Yeah, it was. But I only said it just to make me sound cooler, to make me sound more masculine, because right. I felt like...
You were forced. Well, you felt like you were forced to, and by not by anybody, but by the general society.
Nobody specific really said anything, but I felt like I had to...
Prove something.
Prove something to somebody somewhere that I was a man.
Right. Well, I guess as far as education... you know, I guess band is kind of a band education and band teaching is more of a masculine driven profession. But as far as education, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I look back and I can definitely tell you this. I've gone out and when I've talked about my profession with some other guys that are maybe band teachers as well,
mm-hmm.
I've said, you know, we've been asked what we do and I'm like, oh, a band teacher. And specifically single guys, if I go out with, you know, other single guys, and or even when I was single way back when, it's like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I teach band. And we're all teachers. We're all band teachers. And
mm-hmm.
I remember specifically, and I guess maybe I just didn't put it together. Or I didn't think this, but I do specifically remember people saying to you, don't say that. We're not, you know, you don't have to tell everybody we're band teachers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically, you know, we were in a band as it was. We performed as a band, as a rock band. But some of those guys were like, you know, don't tell people, you know, tell them that's what mm-hmm. we do.
Ruin your street cred.
I'm like, why? But mm-hmm. maybe that's me. And maybe that has to do with me being at a young age. I was saying earlier, you know, when I would go to Europe or wherever, I would be emotionally open and out mm-hmm. there and it's, but I still wanted to close off and not show it either. Like I said, I didn't want to see people. I didn't want to, you know, always try and fight it back.
Right.
And so I guess there's that still, but I don't know. I see what you're asking, but I don't see it from me taking that on, but I do see it from the outside
mm-hmm.
from other people saying, you know, keep that, between us, they don't need to know that.
Right.
You know, that doesn't make us look good or look like men or whatever.
Right.
And maybe that wasn't their intent, but...
What about with your students? Do you feel, do you see, you know, the boys in the classroom versus the girls, a big difference there? Or just the guys just, you know, compared to you, being more emotional, empathic, and the boys, are they trying to live up to this, you know, false image of masculinity, or?
We do a lot of, things where they can share at the beginning of class or whatever. What'd you do? Tell us a little bit about it, or good news or whatever. And a lot of the times the male good news will be, did you see the Tigers won 10-5? You know, that's good news, you know, mm-hmm. to them. And it's very sports driven or very.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a lot of times driven to that. Although I do feel like with the video game era, things have gotten a little bit more. Or online era, things have gotten a little bit more blurred.
Okay.
But one-on-one, I don't see that. I don't know. Maybe it's changing. Maybe it's not. Definitely more. I see more sports-driven. Want to be in gym. Want to do this. I'm going to be a football player. I'm going to be a basketball player.
Gotcha.
You don't see a lot of, I'm going to be a musician.
Mm-hmm. Do you see...
I don't hear any... I don't know about any boy that I've heard this. So I'm in band. I'm going to... do this. This is, I want to know what I'm going to do, but I have had girls say it.
What about guys playing the instruments that aren't perceived as masculine, like flute or clarinet?
We do. Our school is unique that we have had a lot, but they do. That's one thing you say, wow, you have a lot of girl flute players. I'm like, or boy flute players. I'm sorry. I'm like, yeah, so.
Right.
But that's something that's brought up that you do. And I have had, well, my kid's not going to play that, so don't put him on that instrument.
Really?
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, because it's perceived as that. And a lot of times it's unfortunate because it's something that maybe that student or that kid will feel successful with.
Right.
Right.
But they feel they're not allowed to because their parents are uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I've seen that maybe in some places, but it's just, I've seen it everywhere. I've seen it. In band in general. I mean, when I was a kid, I'm sure it was like with you. It was like those instruments were like...
Those are girl instruments.
I didn't go to school with anybody that I was in school with specifically. I can remember that played... That was a girl that or a boy that played flute. Now, there were some girl percussionists.
Yeah, my drumline in high school was mostly girls.
Yeah, and we had some females that were on it, but there was also... Where I teach is... I do have to say, where I do teach it, it is pretty much a melting pot, whether it be with backgrounds or gender barriers. It is a lot better when we talk about it. So just talking about it right now, I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool, because it is.
Yeah, good.
It is. So I don't know if my little world, I'm just naive, or if where I'm at is just that special. And I think that's part of it, though. I do. I think because we are so diverse and so it's so exciting.
And that could
with
be
that.
Partly your influence as well.
Yeah. And so I guess I look at it and go, if I was, because I'm sure it was looked at differently because I'm a musician or whatever, that I would look at that it was, well, that wasn't what the boys do or what masculine people do. But... Maybe I was at a point where I was like, well, I've done it since I was little and it was okay to do.
Right.
My family and my parents definitely said, you know, were encouraging of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Of me participating in music and starting at a young age. And maybe because of that, it was the way I was brought up. And so that kind of filtered into me. And I was like, you know, this is what I do. You don't like it. Mm-hmm. Whatever. So, you know, I've never really broken it down that far, but.
Right.
That might be it, but you know, what about you? I mean, as far as you did say with the architecture, you know, versus interior design, but as far as music, were you ever looked at differently, or did you find a group once you got out of elementary school? Or did you stay that loner?
I think I found a group within the band community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think drums, you know, was a different category for some reason.
Right.
It was, I remember that term band fag got pushed around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the football players were the cool guys.
Right.
Even though they went two seasons and didn't win one game, we were still the ones made fun of.
Yeah.
And that was always interesting. But I think being in the drum line, because like you said, it's seen as this more masculine, like dominating thing, even though the drum line was mostly girls.
Yeah.
I know for me, it was a shot going from high school to college drum line because that was all guys. And it was definitely like bros.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't feel like I fit in there. Mm-hmm. Like I did 2 years. I took a year off in between for, you know, my first and third year. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to fit in. I just didn't like there was, I just wasn't into that. And it kind of bums me out, though, because I see there's a lot of lasting relationships from there, which is great. And sometimes it bums me out that I didn't get into that or I didn't put myself out there. But it had a lot to do with me just not feeling like, I guess I didn't think that at the time, but looking back, I probably just didn't feel like I was masculine enough to be into that.
I hear what you're saying.
That group of bros, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I did it. I stayed through it, and that's obviously we met. But, we have this one, so that's pretty cool. I mean, this lasted from there, but I did it for a while, and I did feel like it was a place that I belonged. It actually was part of the reason why I finished what I was doing, finishing school. But, you know, you made an interesting point going back a little bit when you said in school you kind of had that. I kind of had the opposite, even though it was more, I guess, maybe more masculine in college. It was pretty masculine drumline for where I was at, too, in high school. But I look back and go, I remember when I earned my varsity letter and I did a sport and I wasn't very good in the sport, and I did band, and I earned my varsity letter for band, and I didn't want to put, like, marching band on my jacket.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to put, so I ended up, I think I ended up putting on the high school varsity jacket, it was, like, drumline and swimming.
It's like, drumline was okay.
Drumline was okay, but marching band wasn't, and putting the marching band letter on it was, and I had to have the varsity swim letter. But it's funny, and I think this is where it was different for me in college. Although I did fit in with the drumline very, very well, I did have a lot of really close friends that weren't just in that section, and I think that's where maybe it was a little different for me too, because I had that different outreach, and I fit in both places, and I had the ability to. And a lot of my really, really close friends are drummers, and a lot of my really, really close friends are in the band.
Right.
But I do look back and go, okay, so yeah, I did. Going back, going, okay, I did want to fit in. I did want it to be masculine. And I look at those things like the jacket. And it wasn't okay in my mind to put marching band, but it was okay for drumline. And it was because I didn't want to be made fun of for not being manly enough.
You mentioned even with the college jacket, you know, I do remember feeling a big pride of, you know, being able to wear the band jacket.
Yeah.
But I rarely wore it, but I wore my drumline jacket all the time.
Yeah. And in college, the same thing. But now I think it's, I do both. I still wear my drumline one a lot, but I'm proud of both. And but I do remember though, still getting the marching band one and being extremely proud of being able to have that one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. We did wear those a lot. I still to this day wear that one more. I mean, I wear it out and wear it to back and forth to work sometimes. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting that, you know, it brings up a lot, and a lot of the stuff that we're talking about right now, it's just kind of like, whoa.
Yeah.
Even after watching the documentary, going, well, I can kind of see myself fitting in the middle there. I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that, or, boy, I need to watch that, because when I'm giving off what I'm as a parent to either my child or as a teacher to kids, what am I putting on to them, or what am I giving off as far as, am I able to put myself out of it and go, okay, is this something that they can choose and feel comfortable doing whatever they decide? Or am I pushing something that maybe is more societal driven of stereotypes or of masculinity? And, you know, that drove that question in my brain quite a bit when I was watching that documentary. And, you know, I look back and I think I'm lucky that I had parents that were very loving and caring, and it was okay for me to be upset, or it was okay for me to cry when we would be in visiting family and I'd be upset, physically upset that I was leaving those people, not seeing them, because we would only see them every 5 years. And that was okay. It wasn't looked upon as like, don't do that. It was looked upon, oh man, that's tough that you're that
right
it was more of a nurturing and caring thing rather than approaching it of, don't do that because you're going to see them in, you know, soon. They're not going anywhere.
You know, I feel the same, lucky. Like, I did not feel any pressure from my parents to either not get in the arts or not, you know, especially my dad has been very supportive, well, my mom too, but, you know, on the masculine side, he's never made me feel less than for staying home or for being an interior designer, or like, he's never been like, what, you want to do that? Like,
right.
If anything, he's just surprised that I have so many women friends. But you know, it's, he kind of chuckles about it.
Did you always have more women friends?
Yeah. I remember my first friends and from like kindergarten, there was this girl lived down the street, Deanne, and she knew friends. That's where I go play. Like, we play tag in her basement. I do remember like being in a room and like seeing like the My Little Ponies and stuff and being like, this is weird and it smells like flowers in here and kind of liking it, but I didn't want to play My Little Ponies. But like, that was my core group of friends until it became not cool to play with girls. And then I was kind of like in this limbo where I had friends, but I didn't have like a best friend until middle school.
Right. Yeah. No. And I think for me, I've always been friends with a lot of girls, a lot of guys too, but you know, there was always a lot of being encouraged to have friends, whether it's boy or girl. And there was a time there, I do remember, and for sure in middle school, I definitely didn't really have any friends that were girls. You know, you always at some point were trying to, you know, for me, you know, when you have a girlfriend or whatever, that was different than your friends at that age. Right. Yeah. So, so I think my friends, when you're looking at it from that standpoint, there weren't any girls that were just, you know, I'll call them up on the phone and we're friends and that's it.
Now, do you, either now or then, do you feel more comfortable talking to women or men? Do you feel when you talk to men, you change a little bit, bro it up a bit, butch it up a bit?
I definitely don't feel like I can show emotion as much in front of guys. Yeah. Okay. For me, I think, yeah, for sure. I don't feel like I can let that guard down. But when I do talk to people wherever I'm at, whether it's a friend of mine, because I have friends that are female, and I feel like I can talk about those things. Like, if I'm gonna give a speech, that's gonna be hard for me to do. I can say, you know, this is gonna be hard for me. I don't think I'm gonna make it through, and I'm gonna break down.
Yeah,
but I don't know if I would say that to my guy friends. Yeah. Some of them, yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's like three. That I know for sure I could say that to and get some advice back from them. But then again, those guys are also more in touch with being, you know, more with displaying their emotion and caring. And I do think it's a little bit easier in the profession that I'm in too, because there is a lot more, like you said earlier, a lot more nurture involved with what we do and a lot more caring.
Yeah.
Not that people don't care in their other professions.
No, I'm trying to say,
but you're dealing – what I'm dealing with is people every day, you know, live people and people that are learning, and people are learning what the world is and what, you know, how to belong and how to fit in with whatever path they choose. And you there's a lot of sensitive things that go into that. And you have to kind of read the room, for lack of better terms, of how do you handle those things? And I think that you are kind of riding both sides with whatever you know you have to do.
I definitely filter when I'm with guys, and it's nothing I do on purpose. It's just like this like subconscious thing that happens, but I tend to feel more myself when I talk to women. Like, I don't feel like I have to filter myself or put up a mask.
Right.
Where with guys, yeah, I feel like I need to protect myself a little bit more and show a little bit more bravado, which is hard for me because I don't have any.
So the guys, like, if you when you were working in interior design and working on these buildings, whenever you'd go to Vegas or wherever you would go, the other guys in your profession, I'm assuming there were other guys that did interior design in your group.
Well, in my office, no, yeah, in my office, there really wasn't any other guys that did interior design. You know, there was architects. And, you know, I like those guys, but I definitely felt like I had to impress them.
That, so that was still there. That's what I was curious.
It was still there.
There was people within your profession that were male that did specifically what you do. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that comfort if it was another male that you could let that guard down and feel more normal? Or not normal, more natural.
I think I still had to put that up. And that it wasn't until I started these Vegas jobs where we were paired with designers from Paris and New York and Toronto that they were straight up interior design firms. They weren't architecture firms. Mm-hmm. And they were all guys we were dealing with. And it wasn't until I saw that that I felt like much more secure.
Right.
Because they weren't like macho guys. I kind of felt like, all right, well, yeah, like this is cool. I was really into that.
So what, how was there, so working in different cultures, how did that relate as far as what we're talking about with masculinity? What did that what was their kind of, or did you not know them well enough to know?
I don't think I got to know them well enough to experience like a cultural thing.
Because I'd be curious what other cultures are. Is this something that we're culturally driven towards with all the being inundated by the action movies and the sports? And maybe that's different now with the internet making the world so small.
Mm-hmm.
But do we drive that with what the dollar signs show as far as like media portraying because it sells advertisements, you know?
Right, yeah.
And you know, it's funny while we're talking about this, one thing that comes to mind is I look at who's the guy that he's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he's Terry Crews. Seems like a dude that's like definitely marketed because he's a buff guy. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You know
what I'm talking about? He does the Old Spice commercials.
Yeah, and he makes his chest dance.
Yeah.
He was in.
You look at him and he's very, he's like a manly man. But
yeah.
I feel like when you hear him talk, and I'm trying to remember if I've seen him on an interview, so I could be wrong because I'm not a huge fan of, the show's funny. I don't watch it though.
Right.
But I feel like he's the type of guy that's portrayed in that because that's who he is. But I don't. Like, the image I see of him or when I hear him talk or...
He seems much softer than how he's portrayed.
And, you know, that's kind of... It's neat because it's what I feel like people need to see. You can be this guy that loves those things, but you can let down that guard.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's until we have more people that are seen in those masculine professions that can let their guard down. And you see it more now when guys are on football or whatever, that maybe they'll win an event or win a sporting event or win something and that kind of their emotions kind of get out.
Yeah.
And it's different. You know, I don't remember seeing as a kid after a Super Bowl a football player crying on TV.
I don't remember seeing a Super Bowl as a kid.
I don't know if I ever watched it all the way through either.
Right.
But I'm trying to think back, and maybe I'm wrong, but if you look back now, I bet if you looked up clips at the end. You know what I remember? I'm going to Disney World. But I don't remember crying. That's what I remember them saying, walking back to the locker room, tough. Now you see it, I feel like, and maybe it's just because I'm observing it more as an adult and I'm up later or whatever.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, them in tears going, I'm doing that. So is the barrier breaking down? I don't know. And then ultimately, how does this affect our kids? Like, when does that start to help? Or what does help?
Mm-hmm. Well, to go back to that one quote where it says, masculine is rejection of everything that's feminine. That really spoke to me because I feel like you see little kids, little boys, and it's definitely like, I don't want that. That's for girls.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like sometimes a lot of girls are like, well, I can do that. I can get what I can like that too. Where boys are rarely saying, well, I can like pink too.
Right.
I can like flowers too. You know, a lot of them reject that. And back to what you said about the marketing, I feel like that's totally a marketed, like learned behavior.
Right. I do see that it's okay for girls, it's I don't want to say that. I do. It's a tough one. It's tough. I don't know if it's easy to change or not. I feel that like it, but definitely when you hear the word masculine, you hear anything that's not feminine.
Yeah.
But a female can be feminine, but like the masculine stuff.
Yeah, you can be feminine and I see like that, football, and, but you can't be masculine. And
I think it's a champion thing. I think it's great. Yeah. And I think partly is we don't stand up for it enough as men. We don't say, no, wait a minute, masculinity isn't about being rough and tough and not crying or not saying to your buddy, hey, man, I love you, man. You know, I've got your back. You need something, I got you.
Yeah.
We won't do it. You know, when somebody's upset, you know, a lot of times I remember is going, oh, man, you'll get through it. You'll fight through it. Just fight through it. We'll get through it. We'll fight through it. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, man, that's tough. You're going through that. It's hard. But yeah, I got your back, not, dude. You know, I love you. Or whatever.
There's not a lot of empathy between guys. There's a lot of just suck it up, bro-ing man it up, out. And keep going.
Yeah. Bro-ing it out. Really, that's the way I look at it. It's just like,
yeah.
Well, all right. It's all right, man.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get it next time.
Yeah. Got it, bro. It's okay, bro. Have a beer, bro.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting topic. And this documentary is something that I feel like they should be showing college kids as they're going into school as freshmen, you know, or wherever you can watch it. But I found unique was when they did break down the barriers in it.
Yeah.
With the young kids. Mm-hmm. It brought out a lot of things that they were masking, you know, deep inside that they felt like they couldn't talk about. And maybe it was contributing to something else, some other factor that was leading them down a bad path.
It made me look at myself and analyze some of the things that I have done and do based on how I perceive masculinity and how it should be shown. And it kind of still breaks my heart that I wouldn't tell people what I did. I'm a grown man, you know, and I wouldn't tell people I was an interior designer. I would say I work at an architecture firm. I would still do that because I felt that uncomfortable. When I think about that, it kind of really bums me out. Yeah. And then now that I have kids, like I would not want them to filter anything that they're proud of.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they're worried about what somebody somewhere might say or think.
Yeah. I don't want my kids to do that either. I mean, I don't want my daughter to think that she can't do something because it's not seen as appropriate to what females are supposed to do. Or I don't want to portray and give off things that, and let them know, no, that's a man thing. That's a masculine thing to do. I don't want to do that either to my daughter, because if she wants to do something, I want her to be proud of what she loves.
Yeah, you don't want...
What I worry about looking at this as a parent, because I don't have a son. I have a daughter. I look at it as going, okay, what am I giving off? Is what is masculine after watching this? How am I portraying masculinity? Am I portraying it in a way where my daughter will go, I can't do that because that's a thing that men can do? And I don't think I do that, but watching it going, wow, I kind of say some things like that. And it's just minor little things that maybe that it's, that we look at.
Yeah. I don't want my daughters to not do something because they feel they can't, because it's a boy thing. And I don't want any boys to feel like they can't do something because it's a girl thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've done some things that would be perceived as feminine. Because I enjoy it. So it hasn't bothered me enough to stop from doing it, but I still feel super uncomfortable and I'm trying to own that more. But one thing they said in this movie that stuck with me, the guy said, anything you do with your son or daughter is masculine. So as fathers, anything we do is masculine. Yeah. Whether I want to go take a sewing class, whether I want to go fishing, like anything we do is masculine because we're fathers.
Yeah, no, that's true, and that's the way we got to shift our thought. And and that's kind of where I'm at, is going, okay, when you look at what is masculine or being a man or whatever, that's where the mind shift has to happen. And I think until you look at it and step back and go, well, that's true, because I'm doing it, it's masculine because I'm doing it. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, painting doing a canvas work or sewing a quilt or whatever. It's masculine because I do it, but it's okay because anybody can do a masculine thing and it doesn't matter. And even if it's perceived as female or feminine, it's still fine because you're doing it and it's okay to do it. It's almost like looking at it as like me doing it is masculine. So it's a masculine thing. I don't know. Is that maybe a way to look at it? I don't know. Or is that still perceiving or perpetuating the masculine stereotype?
if you do something, it's masculine?
Yeah, it's like it's almost, I don't want to say proving a point, but almost putting it out there going, you know what, I have enough confidence that this is masculine that I'm going to do it. And it doesn't matter what it is, if it's perceived as feminine or masculine, is that still perpetuating the masculine stereotype? Or
I guess I don't think so.
You know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, to me, it's like, it's almost that you do, you step out and go, I am going to bake a cake. Let's say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of what I'm, because none of these things to me,
and I'm going to make the best damn cake there is.
Right. It doesn't really matter to me. Like I'm struggling to find things to even say because, but I wonder if, let's say, society perceives that as only feminine. Okay. That's what we're driven towards is feminine, but guys are doing it. Guys, is it masculine because a guy says, you know what, I don't care if it's masculine or feminine, I'm doing it because it's masculine for me. Mm-hmm. And is that perpetuating the stereotype of masculinity because we're saying it is masculine, it's manly?
Right.
I don't think so. I think that we need to stand up more for what we want to do as men and be perceived as and not always be perceived, because not all of us are, and I'm not one of them. I'm not a person that's right. Like, man up, you know.
Yeah.
I'll be the first one to tell you, man, I cry on some of the TV shows. You know, there's yeah. Or a song that comes on, and there's ever since I've had a kid, too. It's like, I'll cry if there's a commercial, like a, there's uh-huh. I think there's a Johnson & Johnson one or something lately, or a baby one that was just like, it's crazy, you know, and it's just, I start tearing up or crying or.
Yeah, I can't.
Story or, you know, on a TV show yeah. That's, you know.
I can't go to anybody's wedding and not cry.
Yeah.
Because I picture my daughter up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, I got to look away and I got to pretend. And, like, I'm fighting back, like, you know, glossy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Otherwise, if I let go and be like, why are you crying at their wedding? You don't even really know them.
You know, and I wonder, too, I saw my dad as a kid cry a handful of times, and you know, it was strange to me because it was a non-masculine perceived thing from
yeah.
Not because of them, but because of what I saw on TV or saw at school. And I look back, I was really, and I haven't really talked about this before, but I was really sick when I was in college. Mm-hmm. You were there and you lived through this. And, I think after that experience, I mean, I had almost died when I had meningitis. And I think my whole view kind of even changed more, where it was like, I'm getting a second chance here, so I don't give a damn really, maybe. But
that makes sense.
I definitely feel like maybe some of that shifted, and even in my family even more. Not that it wasn't supported as whatever, because they always, you know, I was always in music. I was always doing things that were just what we did, but maybe, I don't know, I share my emotions more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just outreach more. But, you know, you look back too, and I did a lot of speaking on it or doing different events, and it was like, if I could skate, when I would do, you know, I could do talks or whatever, and if you could talk and I'd share my story. And here's, I knew my story was successful, and I was getting across to know that this was something that was tough, and it could end poorly for somebody.
Right.
If you're not aware of it and know that there's steps that you can do to, you know, counteract whatever happens when you're sick with meningitis. I knew I was successful, and this kind of ties in, is if I could make the moms cry before the kid was going to college with my story, and the dads get freaked out, like, no, that can't happen to my kid.
Yeah.
Then I knew I was hitting somewhere.
Right.
And that is exactly, you know, it wasn't okay in my mind. Well, not that it wasn't okay in my mind, but that's just the way it was driven. And that's kind of like the whole thing we talked about with the media driving things. It's like, when they market, that's what we're driving at.
Yeah.
You got the one on this side and one on one side with being, you know, more feminine, and one on the other side being more masculine driven. You have two different things. You may be marketing the same darn thing.
Right.
But there's two different ways to market it.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at it that way too. So I don't know, maybe I opened up more after that. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I still was just an emotional kid too. And what's neat is it was okay.
Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, Adam in college, he did get meningitis and he did almost die.
Yeah, no,
it was a really big deal. So that's what he's talking about. happen. It was a big deal at the university.
Yeah, it was a big
obviously
deal.
Obviously a big deal in his life.
Yeah, no, and that's what, so I'm emotional about that still, and I get emotional, and I mean, yeah, I get a second chance, so I feel like whenever there's something that's kind of ending or something that's kind of, you know, like a friend of mine that's retiring or whatever, it's always a big emotional thing to me because it's like it's something ending and you're moving forward, and it's like you never know when you get another chance to do something. But
right,
yeah, it's a big topic. But then how are we being perceived, you know, as we move into adulthood and to our children? Like, what, how do we take this to the next step to make it?
Yeah.
Because I feel like ultimately there is no one way or the other set. It's not feminine, it's not masculine, it's just, it is, right?
Yeah.
But how do we move to that? I don't know. Is that what it is? Is that what...
For me, I kind of get blurred on what feminine and masculine is, because when I start to think about the traits that make a man, in my eyes, like a real man, is like showing up. Like, you just got to show up. Being there for your family, doing whatever that is. For me, it's staying home.
Right.
And being into that role. But then I think what makes a good woman a woman, it's the same thing.
Right.
And then being empathic, being compassionate, like all these, they're just like a good people. So it starts to kind of like, well, what is masculine and feminine when I think about what a real man should be? You know, I think men need to be more in tune with their emotions. And I feel like the only emotion men historically are really allowed to share is anger.
Yeah.
You know, you can get angry, you can get pissed, but to be sad, to be, you know, emotionally upset like that, it's much tougher to show.
Right. But think about what's most effective. Like, I think about what's most effective, and when you look at it that way, and I look at it as like how I'd portray it to my daughter as she gets older and can, well, she's already reading what's sad and what's happy, what's angry. You know, you can already start to sense those things, and she gets sad, and, you know, or whatever, or when we get sad. And I look at what back in history or back in whatever we've seen media or on, or heard or seen at school or seen in a public forum, some of the most effective things for change, or things for, and change meaning like any sort of, whether it's be with something, a fight, or whether it be with a war, whether it be with just in general, anything. A conflict, or, you know, I feel like the most effective resolutions that I've seen in any sort of conflict, I guess I should call it, is one when you see the person that's addressing whoever, one side or the other, let the guard down and go, this is horrible for both sides.
When you just,
and
like,
maybe they'll cry, or maybe they'll just be solemn in their voice or get quieter.
Yeah.
When you look at those things, it's like,
when they take the mask off,
those are the most effective, because all we see, you know, when we perceive that, and our kids do that too, you can get in front of them, we can scream.
Yeah.
And I remember this, and I know this is something that I'll remember, and I take it into my parent bag that I've learned, is you can be screamed at as you know, as a child or whatever, or wherever you may be, in a store by a clerk or at school or wherever you may be, and you can be yelled at. And a lot of times you're like, screw that guy. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have to listen to you, right?
Right.
But if you got somebody who goes, you know, you doing that really bothered me, because, you know, you're hurting yourself because you're doing something wrong, but you're really taking away from me or others or whatever it may be. And just times that just makes me a little sad, and I'm sad about it. That totally changes a whole way.
It's a different dialogue, yeah.
Yeah, and I look back, and the most effective things, whether it's in history or whether are the people that can let, specifically males, instead of getting on a microphone or getting in as somebody that's in a place of power, screaming down, this is wrong, we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to fight, we need to whatever, I'm going, wow, this isn't good for either side. We don't like what's going on here or there, or I don't agree with you because you took my cookie or whatever. you know, that made me feel bad, you know. If you really wanted some of it, I probably would have given you half of this or whatever it may be, whatever the conflict. Right, you look at it, was like, why did you take that? Versus, wow, if you just asked me and you were hungry because you were hungry, you didn't have to, I would have shared with you. Totally different. And I want that to kind of go towards my daughter. I want her to know that that's okay.
Do I
always do that? No.
That is a very tough.
But it's something I always try and want to keep in the back of my head to kind of, you don't have to get angry to resolve a conflict.
That's very tough as a parent to have that patience, because there are times my daughter is very strong-willed and emotional and tired and, you know, is up for a fight. And, my first reaction is to get angry back. Be like, you didn't listen. You know, you need to listen. You need to blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, when you're able to stop and be like, what's going on? Like,
what's really getting to the...
Yeah, you give her a hug and be like, what is going on? And it kind of diffuses the situation. Sometimes, you know, I mean,
I'm not great at either. I'm not saying that's something I do all the time. I'm just saying, but I know I remember the most things that I remember that are effective are those times.
Oh, yeah. Those are super effective, but they're difficult. It's, you know, when you got some little kid yelling at you or in your face, like, it's, you know, everybody has a breaking point. It's like somebody poking your eyeball. At some point, you're going
to
like...
Well, you have to defend yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
But you're right. Diffusing that, approaching it from a compassionate view, as opposed to like, I'm the parent, you obey, you listen. I've never bought into that. Like, I get some of it, but and I also get like, you can't be best friends either. Like, you need to have this, you know, a parent-child relationship.
Right.
But it doesn't need to be, you know, I'm the boss and you listen. Like, it's a collective group. And there's give and take, and both sides have to listen, like you said.
Right. No, and that's the case. And there's times, you know, I'd step back and go, oh, man, I should have handled that differently. Because if I would have looked at it from not just being tired, losing my patience because it's been on and on and on, I could have gotten to the bottom and going, what's really going on and why is this happening regularly or whatever? So I try and give the – I'm going to try, or I try to when I'm a dad – you know, if something comes up, go, why is it happening? Rather than, you went to the neighbor's house without telling anybody. Why would you do that? And go, why were you afraid to tell me where you were going? You know, you can just tell me.
Yeah. Or what, ask.
Was something else going on that you were afraid to tell me about? You know, to let that down and let that situation kind of be welcoming. And I think, especially coming from dads, it is more driven that way. You know what I'm saying? It is more driven as like, oh, your dad's going to be mad. Wait till dad gets home and hears this.
Yeah, wait till dad gets home.
And I don't see that needs to be that way. I don't see why you have to be the enforcer all the time. And I don't see why the female has to be the passive one all the time either in society. Right. That doesn't, and I don't think it happens much as much anymore. But I could be surprised. But maybe it's just because, again, I might be in a different situation, and it sounds like you probably are too, where it's more, you know, 50-50 on both sides. But yeah, I just it's interesting, and it's going to be an interesting challenge and an interesting way to go forward. And 2 weeks from now, I'm going to go, man, I said that on the podcast, and I still got angry. So, but
yeah,
who knows?
People, we're gonna get
or
angry.
2 years from now or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just it's definitely masculinity is something that I think that, like you said before, just needs to shift. It needs to. It is everything's just masculine for whatever you decide to do as a man.
Yeah, yeah. Anything.
For what they said in the movie, you know, or in the documentary.
Yeah, I agree. It's such a broad topic, and there's so many different angles to talk about it. We could go on forever.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good start. I'm sure we're probably going to revisit this a lot on this podcast with other dads
and how they
see it.
Right. And I'd love to hear more from other dads out there that maybe don't agree with us or say, call us out that, hey, no, I don't think it's right. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. So, you know, I'm just going based on what I know and what I've learned and from just experience, not any education or formal education. But I'd love to know. Maybe people don't agree with what I've said or just say you're way off base. But we'd love to hear from you. You know, mm-hmm. we have the Facebook. We have our email address that you'll find. You can find it in the notes. Our Gmail. You know, hit us up there.
We'll post a link to that documentary too. Yeah. It's called The Mask You Live In. A great film. If you have sons, if you don't, I don't know, it struck a chord with me. And that's why I wanted to bring it up. So.
Yeah, no, it's a great topic. I'm so glad you shared with us, and you know, and we'd love to hear more too. On we have Twitter, so @DadExpPodcast @DadExpPodcast. You can find us, and you know, as always, find us in those places, and let us know, and you'll find all that stuff in the notes as well. We'll put the link of the documentary and all the different ways to be able to get a hold of us, and you know. Share with your friends. Let them know about our podcast. And
speaking of sharing, can I do a little update?
Sure. Yeah, please, so update.
I've been in the process of updating my blog, transferring to a new site.
Awesome.
I was at exciting. thegoodthedadandthebaby.com.
Right.
Well, that no longer exists.
Okay.
You'll get redirected to my new site called thedomesticspecialist.com.
Nice.
So I pretty much do all the same stuff. I'm going to be more active. I haven't been very active, but
okay.
All the recipes, all the house projects, all the stuff with the kids, the trying to fit in with the PTA, like it's all going to be there.
And help us out here. So
yeah.
And well, hopefully we can help contribute to that too for you. So somehow that we can be a platform for you to get more of, you know, into that for that.
Awesome.
That outlet for you. And, you know, subscribe to this. We'd love to hear back from you, and you know, let us know what you think of us. You know, iTunes feedback, whatever.
But sounds good.
We appreciate you, and thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks, Matt.
All right, catch you next time.